everyone. I want to welcome you to this public forum of the Citizen Oversight Board. It's Thursday, November 7th, and it's about 6:30, and so there are a lot of other places you probably could have been. So we want to thank you for being here with us to talk about a very important topic. The Citizen Oversight Board is a volunteer board that we're appointed by the mayor to do a few things. First and foremost, to make policy recommendations with regard to discipline and hiring, recruiting, issues with regard relevant to the Department of Safety. We also are here and tasked with assessing issues or addressing issues that are important to the community. And finally, to assess the effectiveness of the independent monitor. And the independent monitor conducts independent oversight of investigations of law enforcement. And so it's in that context that we're here tonight doing the work that we do to talk about a new division that's going to be addressing misconduct or allegations of misconduct in the Denver Sheriff's Department. Before we get started with our program, I'd like to introduce the board, the members of the panel, and then also acknowledge the fact that there's some very important people here tonight. So, again, I'm Katina Banks. I'm the chair of the Citizen Oversight Board. To my left is Al Gardner. He's a member of the Citizen Oversight Board as well. To my right is Nikki Brazil. next to her is Armando Saldate. Did I do that right, Armando?
You did.
Armando's with the Department of Public Safety. He's here as a subject matter expert on some of the issues that we're going to be talking about tonight. Next to him is Dr. Mary Davis, also a member of the Citizen Oversight Board, and then finally Molly Gallegos, who's also a member of the Citizen Oversight Board. I want to acknowledge the fact that we're talking now about the department, the Denver Sheriff's Department, and we have with us this evening the interim sheriff, Sheriff Fran Gomez, who we invited to come at our public meeting, and she agreed. So thank you very much for being here. I know you're new, so we just want to acknowledge that you're present, and thank you. Also, the independent monitor, Nick Mitchell, is here in the room with us. Thank you very much, Nick, for being here. We're going to be talking about an advisory board that has been put together to talk about a lot of the policies and issues with regard to how allegations of misconduct are investigated. And there are actually a number of members from that advisory board here. I won't name you all. I just want to acknowledge the fact that you're here. There are also elected officials here. So. Councilwoman Robin Kenich, thank you very much for being here. Robin sat on the safety committee for the city council, and I think, are you still sitting on that committee? So we appreciate your presence. Thank you. Also, Councilwoman Candy C. DeBaca is here. Thank you very much, Councilwoman, for being here as well. and then finally, I need to acknowledge that, you know, we're talking about the Sheriff's Department and issues with regard to discipline, misconduct, investigations, and how they take place. And that is a very serious issue because there have been some problems in the Sheriff's Department in the past. Really good people doing really good work there and trying to do their best, but sometimes it doesn't go the way it's supposed to go, and there have been problems. And so also with us here tonight happens to be the niece and the sister of Michael Marshall. So Natalia Marshall and Miss Brenda Marshall are here. Thank you very much for being here. I should note that the anniversary of Mr. Michael Marshall's passing, arrest, was yesterday. And Mr. Marshall's, the incident with Mr. Marshall, his death, really was a catalyst for many changes in the sheriff's department for the city. But there's still more work to be done, which is why this public integrity division was created. It's why there was a board created, and why we decided that it was important enough to have this be a topic of discussion for this particular board. And so we want to acknowledge and honor the fact that you are here in this very, very challenging time to hear what's happening with the Sheriff's Department to understand what the issues still might be that are a matter of concern for you and for all citizens in the city. So thank you for being here. I think with that, I would like to turn it over to Nikki Brazil. So Nikki's going to talk to you about the Public Integrity Division. She is the member of our body who has set on that advisory board as our representative for over a year?
Just about a year.
She's a volunteer, and she cares enough so much about oversight, right, and in our city and making sure that we get this right, that she has taken of her time to be our representative, and we are grateful to her for that. But she also happens to be now the subject matter expert on these issues that we've been talking about, and that the Sheriff's Department, the Department of Safety, and members of the community, some select members, have been working on for the past year. And so I'll now turn over to Nikki to share with us an introduction of what the Public Integrity Division is, what the objectives are, and then what some key issues happen to be around that the board that's been created has been discussing, that we think that the community, this board, the Citizen Oversight Board, believes the community should be aware of.
Thanks, Katina.
Sure.
All right, I will do my best to live up to that subject matter expert title. I will make some simplifications. These are pretty big processes we're talking about. Also want to note that I'm discussing a policy that's in its draft form. The final policy will be approved by Director Riggs, so everything that I say here might change. All right, the Public Integrity Division is a new branch of the Department of Safety created to take over investigations of deputy misconduct within the Sheriff's Department. The Public Integrity Division, or PID, has two units, the Administrative Investigations Unit, which conducts investigations, and the CRU, or Conduct Review Unit, which makes disciplinary recommendations. So at the beginning of 2019, a 15-member executive advisory board was convened to give feedback on the policies that are being written to govern these units. So let's talk about what misconduct is. Misconduct, broadly, is a violation of the law or of the Sheriff's Department's policies and procedures. Appended to the Sheriff's Department's disciplinary handbook, handbook in general, is a disciplinary matrix. That matrix lists out rule violations, what they are, and what the presumptive penalties for those violations should be. In the past, any allegation of misconduct resulted in a case being opened with Internal Affairs.
Yep.
Okay. So now let's talk about when there should be a full investigation of a complaint. Under proposed draft policies for the PID, certain rule violations may in the future be deemed performance issues rather than misconduct. This is an active discussion we're having now. Those complaints could be routed out of the system, and rather than receiving a full investigation with the Administrative Investigations Unit, they would be sent back to the supervisors within the jail facilities themselves. It would then be up to the supervisors to determine if and how an investigation would proceed and to prescribe the corrective coaching and counseling to the subject deputy. There are certain rule violations that the board, the COB, and the Executive Advisory Board agree don't require a full investigation. If a deputy is late to work, that doesn't need to be investigated as misconduct. If a deputy fails to fill out their vacation paperwork correctly, doesn't need to be investigated as misconduct. But under the proposed policies for PID, the director of the AIU would potentially have very broad discretion to determine what does and what doesn't constitute misconduct. We've had conversations about how that discretion should go, but here are some examples of rule violations that could potentially be relabeled performance issues and therefore be removed from the disciplinary process. Erroneous release, failure to report injury, accurate reporting, preventing escapes, full attention to duties, abandoning post, failure to perform duties, interfering with the grievance process, aiding and abetting a violation of the rules, failure to make required rounds, and the failure to supervise. Some of you may remember that several of the supervisors involved in the death of Michael Marshall were charged with the rule violation failure to supervise. One of the functions of the Office of the Independent Monitor is to make sure that investigations are thorough and complete. This is a sort of a quality control mechanism that ensures cases are handled fairly across the system. If certain cases are no longer considered misconduct and are therefore diverted out of the full investigatory and disciplinary system, it could be hard for the OIM to ensure that the system is fair and effective. Another change being considered within the PID policies relate to what happens when the OIM and the Department of Safety disagree over whether or not a complaint of misconduct should receive a full investigation. Declining a case or issuing a decline happens when, after a review of the facts, Internal Affairs determines that further investigation and disciplinary actions aren't warranted. There have been some high-profile cases where Internal Affairs wanted to decline and close a case and the OIM disagreed. Several times, the OIM objected to IAB's attempts to decline to investigate the death of Michael Marshall. In the past, a decline could not be issued without the OIM's consent. In the new policies, AIU will be able to decline a misconduct investigation even if the OIM agrees, or disagrees, excuse me. So let's talk about final disciplinary decisions. When the AIU finishes an investigation, the file is sent over to the Conduct Review Unit. The CRU then makes recommendations to the Executive Director of Safety about disciplinary outcomes. There are other entities that can make disciplinary recommendations, including the OIM, the sheriff, and the city attorney's office. There are meetings, sometimes called sheriff's meetings, where recommendations are discussed. The COB believes citizens should be present at those meetings. Section 2-389 of Denver's revised municipal code says the Department of Safety's policies shall guarantee the participation of citizens on disciplinary review boards. So the COB has made a request to Director Riggs to be included in those meetings. He is currently discussing it with the city attorney's office. He hasn't made a decision, but we believe whether or not they conclude the ordinance requires citizen participation, that in the spirit of transparency, the Department of Safety should invite it. That's all for now.
Thank you very much, Nikki. So that was a lot in a little bit of time. I think what we want to do is try to break that out for each of you, each of the issues, and try to have a discussion. One of the things we're supposed to do, as I indicated, is to get feedback and assess issues of concern for the community. And these public forums are intended to be the opportunity for the community to share with us their thoughts and concerns, and also to ask questions with regard to really any public safety issue. So it's not, you don't have to just talk about PID, but we thought in particular these three issues rose to the level of concern, or at least importance, that required us to seek from the community more than just our thoughts about it, right? We have our representative sitting at the executive advisory board, taking in the information, hearing what the thoughts are, the discussions around things like the difference between what performance versus misconduct, hearing the debate about whether the or not the independent monitor should be able to prevent a decline of a case before it's been fully investigated in the monitor's reasonable opinion, and also whether citizens should be participating in the disciplinary process. These are debates that are happening right now, or discussions that are happening right now at the board, that we felt the community needs to be aware of, and that we certainly just want to hear your questions and concerns, and your comments, frankly, about them. So I think that maybe one of the best things to do would be to start with the first one, which was performance versus misconduct, right? The proposed changes that are currently being debated really put us in a place where there are certain specifications that in the past have been considered misconduct that really probably shouldn't have been. The examples that Nikki gave, for example, was a deputy showing up late to work. And I think there's consensus that something like a deputy showing up late to work isn't something that should be investigated by the Internal Affairs, or in this case, because it's now going to be a separate division, that would be investigated by the Administrative Investigations Unit of the Public Integrity Division. So the question is about where does the line get drawn, I think, right? And we're of the mindset that when you're talking about issues of potential misconduct, trying to decide what conduct is misconduct versus what conduct is performance isn't something that every person should have the right to decide. That it most likely it's something that should probably go to internal affairs if there's a complaint, and then the decision should be made in the open, right? That a monitor would be aware that there was a complaint. Perhaps the director of AIU would be aware that there was a complaint, and then a decision could be made about whether a full investigation was made. But the conversation that's taking place right now would suggest that rather than that happening, sergeants and captains would decide whether something is actually a complaint that should be reported and should go into the database that the monitor could see, and that we would all know and agree that the right decision was made about whether this was performance or misconduct. I think that is the crux of the issue, but our concern really moves farther along when we start seeing the types of specifications that might be considered. I don't know, none of this is decided yet, but might be considered performance and therefore not investigated versus misconduct. And could you give us some of those examples again, Nikki?
Sure. Erroneous release, reporting or failure to report injury, failure to search, accurate reporting, preventing escapes and the passing of contraband, full attention to duties, abandoning post, failure to perform duties, interfering with the grievance process, aiding and abetting violation of the rules, failure to make required rounds, ensuring the safety of persons in custody during transit. Those are a few of them. And I should say that the current discussion leaves open the possibility of making half a dozen or so broad categories of things that have to be forwarded. And those things would include use of force, sexual misconduct, and bias. So there is agreement that all of those things do need to be investigated by the AIU. Our concern is the specifications, which that word means it's like a rule violation of the department's policies, of the specifications that don't fall into those big buckets, but that still may be serious.
Nikki, may I add some?
Please. So also, Armando is currently heading the Executive Advisory Board meetings. He has a long history with the Department of Safety, so you can direct all sorts of questions to him, too. He's here as the real subject matter expert.
No, I thought you did a great job, so thanks. I'm going to borrow those notes. If anyone asks me, I can summarize for it. You did a good job summarizing the work. I think, like Nikki said, there's a lot of work, and there's been a lot of discussion around this topic of performance versus misconduct. One of the things this hasn't always been something that we've come to consensus on, and one of the things that I've tried to bring to the table is you really can't, or we should try not to put this specification or this rule violation is always a performance violation, and this is always a misconduct violation. There are several examples, like the failure to make your required rounds. Our officers and deputies that work in our jail pods, and they're required to make rounds depending on the classification or housing situation of the individuals in their housing unit. They're supposed to be made in their specified time periods. We have found that there's times where they don't make those rounds, and those are rule violations, and they are opened as cases. Sometimes it's because they have a good reason. There was a altercation, or there was a medical emergency, or things like that. Those were the cases where we were trying to say maybe those could be handled at a level of a supervisor in the facility. However, you do have a failure to make rounds where we've gone and we've had a suicide in our facility or an attempt suicide and an inmate's made that, and we've gone back and we looked at the rounds as part of the investigation of that death or attempted suicide, and we found that the deputy did not make the required rounds. In that case, that's an aggravated case. So I would hate to put failure to make rounds as just a performance issue when that definitely needs to be investigated by AIU and definitely with the oversight of the independent monitor. So this has been the conversation. I want you to know that public safety, we don't want to put boxes and buckets here because it's a very complicated process and very complicated issues. The other thing is repeated violations of minor misconduct. Let's say you have a deputy that's always late for shift. Well, maybe the first time you can have a supervisor talk to that person, maybe a second time. Maybe you try to figure out what's going on, get them to shift, get them counseled. But if this is constantly a problem, and particularly with the staffing issues that we encounter at the Denver Sheriff Department, that may need to be forced to AIU in an investigation. It may need to be, so repeated smaller misconduct issues may need to be investigated and should be investigated in cumulative. We found this with those unauthorized leave cases is what they're called. Those are when deputies come late, show up late for their shift, or call in and don't have the allotted time in their vacation banks to make time. That was a huge driver of the cases. And when we first started looking at this, and when the director first started looking at this, and the problems that the sheriff's department was facing around discipline and misconduct, we found a large number of cases that we brought to the table. Said, you know, these are deputies that are getting misconduct cases that were, you know, they were an hour late or hour unauthorized leave, and that's probably that shouldn't happen. And in the discussion, Nick in the office and the community's input was, no, we want you all to spend your valuable time on those serious cases, whether it be use of force. And last week we had a really good meeting with Director David Walcher, who's the new Administrative Investigation Unit Director, and he brought his feedback and what he's been seeing and what he's been trying to do. And what I was really happy with in that meeting was there was a dialogue around, and what this culminates into is this is a triage process. This is a triage of how do we handle these complaints however they come in, whether it's through a formal grievance, whether it's through an inmate communication called a kite, which is a note, whether it's the inmates picking up the phone and calling Nick's office or writing to Nick and coming over, however it's received, I think what we've heard loud and clear is that the community wants that triage process to be codified, to be put into policy so there's no interpretation or no, you know, sometimes this manager says, oh, we can handle it here at the facility. Other times they say, oh, no, give it to AIU. I think the policy needs to be clear, and right now it's not. Or right now or before the AIU was in place, the policy was there was no movement to have the discretion to investigate those lower level things at the facility. And that's what we were hearing from the command staff and supervision at the DSD. So those were some of the things that we're talking about. It is a very complex issue, but I will tell you that we have heard, and I was happy to hear that Director Walcher was open to Nick having full view and his office having full view of that triage process and those decision trees that are made when we have these violations. There is still some things to be worked out as to where is that data being stored, because this all needs to be tracked. There is a grievance tracking system, and that's what really is a difficult thing, because you know there's called conditions of confinement that sometimes come through that grievance tracking system, but there's also complaints of misconduct, and trying to get through the thousands of grievances and really narrowing and funneling the misconduct cases to AIU, to where Nick's office and the OIM can also have oversight of those decisions, is very important. Hasn't been figured out. Dave and David Walcher is working with Nick, and hopefully they can come up with some language and bring it to our board so we can maybe hopefully get into an agreement on that's how it should move forward. Mm-hmm. I hope that provided a little clarity.
Thank you. Thank you, Armando. I guess I would want to add two things. I think it's helpful and it's encouraging to know that there's openness to there being transparency with regard to all complaints of misconduct, that we're not putting certain things in one place and others, that having all the data in one place is kind of critical. I mean, that's actually one of the important functions of oversight, right, is that we are able to see patterns. We're able to know if the way that we're conducting a particular operation is actually working the way we want it to, the way we plan for it to. So that's actually really encouraging. I guess I also kind of feel that one concern that we've heard in speaking with members from of the rank and file is that if performance issues get handled at the level of the sergeant or the captain, it doesn't go to get investigated. It's true, they don't necessarily want a case opened. They don't want to necessarily have an investigation, but they also want to be treated fairly. They want to make sure that the discipline process is the same, that they're not getting treated differently because they have one sergeant or another, that there's favoritism or something to that nature. And I guess I'm interested in knowing, what's going to be in place for that? What kind of training are you going to be doing? How are you going to ensure that doesn't happen?
Yeah, thanks for bringing that up. That is something that's very important. That is something that I've heard from the deputies and other uniformed staff, is they feel that if it is left to the discretion of supervisors, you're really truly up to the discretion of supervisors, and favoritism, some things like that may come into place. And if you're disliked or you're not, whatever, there can be problems where it's not fairly applied, this discretion. And that's why it's good. That's why it's imperative that we have a clear policy. And if we don't have a clear policy for our deputies to understand, to apply, that's what we have to do. And that's the important work of our board, is to have that clearly defined for them on when there are those cases. And then we have to have oversight. I think the community demands it. I think it's good for the system. I think it's important that there is oversight even of that process, even that they're making the right decisions. And we discussed that a little bit last Friday at our meeting. What does that look like? Does Director Walsh or AIU have some sort of oversight function? There is, through the reform, there was this unit within the Sheriff's Department stood up called the Grievance and Incident Review Team. It's a really good team of individual supervisors, and they review all grievances. They review, respond, coordinate, track all the grievance activity. They also review all incidents of force, and that's like the first thing. And they review the videos and things like that. So I think it's important that we know that there's those things in place, but we also, I think what we've heard, and I know what we've heard, is that the community wants oversight of that, and that the OIM should have some oversight of that process too, because there have been some past cases that come up that where this wasn't in place and things weren't handled appropriately.
Any other COB members have questions, comments about this particular topic?
I'll jump right in. I do have a question, and this is the impetus for it or the motivation for it. I wonder what percentage of the issues that the Sheriff Department is seeing now are a result of misclassification, right? So if we're talking about changing and taking a look at the classification process, what percentage now is a result of misclassification? Like, how big of a problem do we have based on this misclassification? Because if the problem's huge, then yeah, I'm understanding why we need to try to take as much gray out of it as possible. If there isn't a huge problem with misclassification and the old way that it was being classified with the independent monitor being involved, if that was going along in the way that it should, what was the motivation to change it? And what's the motivation to revamp it and make it different? Just from a community perspective, a black and white case, this person did this, therefore they're getting this punishment, that's all great. But the problem is that the issues happen in gray areas, right? So if I'm just listening to this and I'm saying, yeah, well, someone missing a round, not making their round, yeah, sure, that's a performance issue. But if the person misses the round and someone is killed or there's some violence as a result, now we have something different. I guess so those are my two questions there. What prompted it?
Yeah, so when we first started looking at this, so just prior to the Executive Advisory Board and the PID announcement and the decision to go forward with the PID, Executive Director Riggs formed a performance improvement team around DSD discipline. Here are some of the issues, and I think this will answer your question. Over half the department was under investigation. Over half the staff had some sort of IAB investigation. There were cases, or IAB cases were at an all-time high, scheduled to be all-time high, doubling the same number of cases that were in previous years. What we were hearing from staff was morale, it was affecting retention, it was affecting their ability to do their job, that whatever they did, they were gonna get it was gonna result in an internal affairs case, and they were gonna face termination, suspension, or something. So this was a crisis for the director of the office. He was looking at this, he asked us to look at the data. And as you know, Al, one of the things I used to do in my former position, and I still do in some capacity, is data analysis and data things. So we looked at the data. And I will tell you, in some cases, the anecdote didn't match the data. The anecdote of data where there's all these relatively minor cases, and we had staff come to us, we had staff in our performance improvement team, and Nick asked the hard questions, where are these minor cases? My office doesn't see them. And so we looked at the data, and we didn't find a lot of minor cases. The one chunk of cases that we did find and it was unanimous in the consensus that we needed to approach it different, were those unauthorized leave cases. We had over 200, I believe, so in last year, 265 or something. But it was a large number of cases, and those were the cases that we took immediate action out of and put them into, because they're scheduled discipline, we put them into a different process with the OIM's approval. But there weren't a lot, and it does really get tough. And as I was looking at the data, you couldn't just parse out the specifications, because like you said, was it a failure to make rounds during a suicide incident, or an assault took place, or things like that? There was much more to the cases that you had to review the cases and things like that. So yeah, it's not an easy, move this into a box kind of thing.
Right.
So I'd like to jump in on that.
So
that performance improvement team, I attended the last couple of those meetings, but in general, that process was composed of Sheriff's Department and Department of Safety officials, with some city attorney's office folks present. I wouldn't describe it as having been a broad look at what we can do to address some of those very real problems that Armando brought up about deputy morale. We have a very bad overtime issue in our facilities, and when deputy morale is low, it's hard to keep people in the job, it's hard to get new people wanting to do the job, and also the chance of allegations of misconduct increases the more overtime somebody works. So there are some issues, and these were kind of put on the table at the very beginning of the PID process, and they were ultimately left in a sort of, what did we decide, a parking lot, a bike rack,
since it's
Colorado.
Murphy called it, right?
I think.
Bike rack.
and one of those issues would also be training. We've heard from deputies that they don't necessarily get a ton of time with the new policies. Some of them are promulgated via computer system. They're asked to sign off on those via the computer, so that's an area where maybe slowing things down, having more classroom time, might create more familiarity with new policies. And I'm not really clear in this PID process who is going to take charge of that parking lot or where those ideas will go, but they did make it up on a whiteboard at one point.
Right. There is one initiative that's ongoing in the question of overtime and the effect of overtime on misconduct cases and overtime on morale. The Sheriff's Department, and I hadn't worked with this in a while, but the Sheriff's Department is in a partnership with the University of California, Berkeley, and they're doing a study on and a lot of data, and they're looking at a lot of data factors, and I wouldn't be doing it justice to try to summarize it right now, but one of the things they were looking at were some of those overtime issues, leave issues, issues around misconduct cases. I know those were factors because I provided them some of that data. So I'm not sure where that's at, but that is one of the ways, one of the, other mechanism that's going on where they're trying to address that.
And do you know if the outcome of that study, if the report will be made public?
I assume so. I think because it is a university partner and the data was anonymized, meaning that the personal identifiers of our staff were anonymized into like PIN numbers. So I think the public, I think it was intended for public dissemination or even publishing by the university.
Thank you. Thank you for that. I guess I think at this point, you know, does the community or anyone in the audience have any questions specifically around or questions for Armando, questions for us around the specific issue of this change or, yeah, this new perspective to try to define what's performance versus what's misconduct as opposed to, I mean, our view, I think it's safe to say is, you know, misconduct is misconduct and, right. It doesn't mean that someone gets terminated or someone has to get disciplined, but that we're all agreeing that every allegation of misconduct, right, is appropriately categorized as misconduct and reviewed as misconduct in a way that is completely transparent. And getting a view or having the monitor have the ability to see every complaint of misconduct seems important, seems a priority, but happy to would love to hear if there's anyone else who has a question or comment about that. Yeah, you can come to the mic.
I would like to know, my name is Lynn Eaglefeather. My son was killed by the Denver police, Michael Trout, July 12, 2015. And I want to know how many allegations does it take for a cop to be, in order to be charged with, not charged, but investigated, because on August 9th, 12th of this summer, I was going into the Indian Center to go pick up a backpack for my grandson, the son of my son that I lost, and Corporal Albergati, John Albergati, badge number 98027, District 4, followed me inside the Indian Center and asked me my name without him telling me who he was, but he was in uniform. And he proceeded to ask me my name, of what tribe I was from, and when I wouldn't answer him, he asked me again in a really hateful way, and he said, well, what tribe are you? And I said, well, we're the ones that got Custer. And that kind of angered him, you know? So, and then he asked where I lived, and I didn't want to answer him because he didn't tell me who he was, or, you know, he didn't have no reason to be in there in the first place. But I took two pictures of him behind me with this hateful look on his face. And he and I asked the people, you know, I have three witnesses, the director of the Indian Center, the co-director, and the secretary. And I asked them, had he ever been in here before? They said, no. I said, well, did anybody call? No. Well, apparently it felt like he was profiling me and following me in there and asking me if I had ever seen him before. When I told him, I didn't answer with the word. It angered him that I would not speak to him. So he went around the corner and talked to the director of the Indian Center. And then he came back around the corner. And I asked him for his card, and he wouldn't give it to me. He said, what do you need my card for? I said, we're in litigation, and every time a cop approaches me, I have to get a card.
I'm sorry, could you tell me your name again?
Lynn Eaglefeather.
Thank you, Mrs. Eaglefeather. Ms. Eaglefeather, I apologize. Thank you.
So I told him, I said, every time a cop approaches me, I collect a card, and I've got a whole stack of cards. You know, the cops, I live in a high crime area now, and I have to sometimes give my name, but I always ask a cop for a card. So I told him that. I have a whole stack of cards at home.
So is your question about, is it the same question that you initially asked, Ms. Eaglefeather? What does someone have to do? Is that the specific question? Because you're telling us a story, but I want to save time for everyone.
Okay. Well, he didn't have his body camera on, for one thing. Then he stood over me and slapped his body camera on and proceeded to ask me questions. And then I told him, I think our conversation is over because you have no reason to question me this way. So my question is, how many times does it take for a cop? Because he arrested Alex Duran in, he arrested Anthony Clark on 8/12/2019 for using free Wi-Fi. Then he killed a pit bull. Then he killed Alex Duran in February 6, 2018. And now he's harassing me. I talked to Nick about it. I haven't made a formal complaint. Mm-hmm. But how many times does this have to go on before something is is done?
So, I mean, your question is one where I think you've actually already answered it. If you filed a complaint already with the monitor's office, that would be a where to start. I don't know how many times, because I don't think that there's such an answer, but I do know that if you what you can do when you feel as though there's been misconduct is to file a complaint with the monitor, with us, and to have that looked into and have it investigated. But I do want to also say that that's an issue with regard to the Denver Police Department, and we're talking about the Denver Sheriff's Department right now. I think that if you would give us, make sure we get your name and your information, we can follow up with you with regard to your concern about that particular officer. Because you got his name and number. It sounds like you got his name.
And pictures.
Yeah. Yeah.
And pictures.
If you could hold on to those, and then we could talk after the meeting.
I'm going to be on a World Global Jam. It's out of London, and I'm going to discuss these cases. I'm also going to discuss Mr. Marshall's case on this internet radio show I'm going to be on Saturday.
Thank you.
And I just want to say this, that if they're in fear for their lives, they need to put the badges down and find another occupation.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. I think in the interest of time, you had a question, Karen? Okay, I'm sorry. Come on. My apologies.
Good evening. My name is Karen Collier. I'm a community activist, and I have several questions regarding the policies that are currently in effect, apparently, and being considered for the changes that you've talked about. The one that was mentioned was a failure to report injury. And I guess I'd like a point of clarification as to what who the injured party would be in that situation, whether it be the detainee or the sheriff, with regard to that particular injury not being reported and not being considered.
Yeah, I don't know that that's one of the issues. Is it under the accurate reporting? I don't know that specific rule, but. That is something that would go through the triage process as we're talking now, and depending on the facts of the case or what the allegation is, how that would be handled. So that, like I said, it's complicated. It's issue by issue. It's not just that specification would not be. You'd have to look at it holistically. You'd have to look at what happened, what was it? Was it a use of force where someone was injured? And if that wasn't reported, I guarantee you that's going to be investigated by the AIU.
So, as I recall, and Nikki, correct me if I'm wrong, did you mention that that part of what was being considered was what would not be considered by as a misconduct as opposed to performance was failure to report injury?
So what we did is we went through the disciplinary matrix and we looked at all the different types of specifications and we pulled out ones that wouldn't fall into those kind of six general buckets that I mentioned earlier.
Okay.
Sexual misconduct, bias, use of force, because we agree that all those things need to be forwarded and a case needs to be opened every time. So these are examples of specifications that, depending on the final policy outcome, may or may not result in a case being opened every time. They might result in this kind of more discretionary process where a case goes to the AIU director and the AIU director basically sends it back to the facilities to be handled by first the GERT team, it seems, and then usually jail supervisors.
Okay.
Does that answer your question?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you. I guess another point of clarification is with regard to the declination issue. Mm-hmm. Of excluding but would it be a process whereby the independent monitor would be excluded from consideration of a case being investigated?
Yeah, thank you for that question. So there was one additional thing I wanted to add to Nikki's summary of that. So currently, right now, as policy stands now in the old policy, the Office of Independent Monitor has to concur for a case to be declined. The new policy proposed language, this has not been approved. It is a source of dissension amongst our EAB, and it's something that we're gonna bring forward to the executive director, make a decision. But there still is a mechanism in that policy, in the new policy, where the AIU director could decline the case. If the OIM disagreed, the OIM could then go to Executive Director Riggs and petition for a reconsideration of that, and that Executive Director Riggs would be then the final decision maker in that. So there still is a way for the Office of Independent Monitor to voice their concerns about a declination or not in those cases.
So how is that different from the current policy?
In the current policy, before it even goes to the executive director or to the it needs to have the concurrence of Nick's office.
Okay.
Is that correct, Nick? I'm pretty sure. Yeah.
So under the new policy, a case could be closed and, you know, marked as closed in the system, and it would kind of fall out of the queue of things that they need to investigate, and time could pass while that decision is being made by the executive director. So in the current policy, the case stays open.
So could you speak to the impetus for changing that policy?
So the impetus for changing that policy was in this was something, or the proposed change, because it hasn't been changed. But the proposed change, and why the arguments for that have been, there was no room for discretion in those cases. That these cases were being opened, the amount of cases that were being opened, that they wanted to have that ability, but also keeping in mind that they did keep in room for the monitor to, if he did not agree with that, to go to the executive director if need be.
So am I hearing that you wanted to cut down on the number of cases that were up for review by implementing this change?
No, that's not because they're under review anyway, right? They are under review. What I'm saying is that
further review.
Further review. And it's not necessarily my change. I'm just telling you that side of the house, that's where the people that proposed this language change, that's what they were saying. The staffing and the leadership at the time of the Denver Sheriff's Department Internal Affairs Bureau said that's something that they'd asked for. Because when that was a policy change, when the last time this policy was changed, that was a mandate that was put into it, and they'd asked for that to be taken away.
I'm not sure that I heard, and the reason for that is what?
The reason
for the proposed change would be what?
The reason for the proposed change was, at the time that this was being contemplated and at the time that all this was happening, there was a record number of cases. There was, the staff were saying that there were open cases for minor things, that they had no discretion to close cases, that they were spending time investigating matters that did not have any serious allegation or merit to them, and that they're wasting time doing it on those as opposed to the cases with more serious in nature, the serious misconduct cases.
Armando, but you aren't saying that you had heard from your staff that there is a significant number of incidences where the monitor's office essentially blocks a decline that you think there wasn't good reason for. There,
right.
I understand that's a fairly small number of cases
that
there's a disagreement about the declines.
Right. That's a very small number of cases. And what the staff or the leadership at the time was telling us is that they would normally, they didn't always disagree, but they would go along with the monitor's recommendations and not decline a case and then further investigate that. They asked for that to be changed.
So is it the staff or the leadership? Which one?
Well, the staff approached the leadership I'll remind you again, this hasn't been changed. It's something that the executive director will have to contemplate. But he's hearing from all sides on this, right? They're hearing from all sides. At first, there wasn't, I don't even think, built into this policy change, the mechanism for the Office of Independent Monitor to petition the executive director directly prior to it being closed. And that's my understanding of the policy, is prior to it being closed, declined that Nick could go to the executive director and voice his non-agreement with that declination, and then the executive director would then make the decision whether to close it or open it for whatever Nick's office was recommending.
Are you aware that the Marshall case was a case that apparently the Sheriff's Department wanted to not investigate any further, and it was at the insistence of the independent monitor that investigation continue?
Right. So then under this new policy change, that exactly what happened would happen again. If the AIU director in that case said we wanted to decline it, Nick would take that same route. He petitioned or spoke with the executive director at the time, and the executive director agreed, and that case wasn't declined. But so the same method would take place.
Yeah, and I think what I hear Karen saying, and at this point, if the executive director decides not to move forward, then he is the final say on that.
Yes.
Right? And I think what Karen is saying and what we hear back from the community is that lever, mm-hmm. right? It's almost like that lever is being taken out of the process, because going to someone saying, I don't agree with you, I think it needs to be different, but you really don't have any type of leverage or any lever to make that final decision is what the concern is from a lot of citizens on that point.
Okay.
Correct.
Right.
And I hear that, and I'll take that back to the executive director. And that is something that Nikki has also brought to our group, and Nick has also brought the voice to the concern to our group. When we're done with our policy, and like I said, we have not had a full consensus on every point. There's been a lot of consensus in what we've talked about in developing this policy. Those points are all going to be forwarded to executive director in an executive summary, where we're going to say this was what, and Nikki, Pastor Davis, Nick, we'll all get their points on each side, and then that's something. And then they'll go to the executive director, and then he will follow up with discussions with everyone hearing these same points. So
in this process, where are you? I mean, in terms of considering the changes that you're proposing and having discussions about them and including the COB, where are you in that process?
So right now we are trying to wind it down. We've gone through our, so there's three policies that we've looked at. First was the old Denver Sheriff Department Internal Affairs Bureau policy, now the Administrative Investigation Unit policy, the Conduct Review Office policy that's now the Conduct Review Unit, and then the Discipline Handbook. Those three first had to just be fixed, the language, changing internal affairs, changing the structure of the organization, codifying the whole change from the DSD now to the Department of Safety. We've gone through those changes. We've also had proposed language changes that we've all made, that they first went into a subcommittee of people that were actually in the AIU, that were in the CRU. They took the current policy and added things and made changes. Then that was brought to us, and we would go in our weekly meetings line by line, either agreeing, disagreeing, adding new language, constructing, you know, better written language in those. So we are in our final drafts. We've gone through our AIU and our CRU policies. Like I said at the beginning of this, the last policy that one of the last policies we were working on was the AIU policy. We had an opportunity to hear from the director of the AIU. He's working with Nick's office right now to try to come up with some language to help in that triage process. Hope to get that in fairly soon. We can talk about it, see where we're at in discussions. The CRU, we're pretty much wrapped up on that, where we're at with that. The discipline handbook is something that, I don't know, we may be getting into it later, but that's something that that we've really changed course on that, and we're making up what we're calling cleanup language. And then there were some law changes that had to be fixed into that. So that's what we're concentrating on. And in our meeting tomorrow, we're hoping to get further along with that as well.
So when you arrive at what will be, what, a second draft, will that be presented to the community for yes. consideration?
Yes. Yes, and that's what we've been trying to do, and Nikki's been asking our employee union representatives on our panel, Teamsters and Denver Sheriff Union have been asking to share with their constituency, and we just wanted, because as Nikki stated earlier, this has been moving. It's a fluid document. We know we can't achieve perfect, but we're trying to get good, and we're trying to hear from the community, being here, listening to things, to try to put some perfect. But yes, it's important that you all see it. It's important that once it's finalized, that it's made public, that it should be on our websites. It should be everywhere for everyone to see. I believe the DPD does that. I think that's something that it's important to get the feedback on. Yes.
And would you estimate that you are, what, 6 months away from a final draft?
No, I hope we're very much closer. I hope to have it by the end of the year. And everyone's working really hard here. You know, the volunteers on our board, everything. We're working really hard to try to get it done as fast as we can, but also making sure that we listen, making sure that we can hear everyone and everyone's input and feedback, and not being able to change. Initially, maybe Nikki can talk about this. Initially, when we were first convened as a group, there was some very big goals about us getting done within a couple of months. And we heard loud and clear from the OIM, from our community, you know, we got to slow down. This is a lot. This is a lot to change. We got to hear from our constituents. We got to have a process. So we've slowed down, and we're not going to continue to make that mistake. But we do want to make sure that we try to get this out, because our staff needs it. Our new processes, we need to have a clearer policy so we can start improving what we're doing.
And so when is the next quarterly community meeting that the COB would have?
It's typically around March.
And you're, again, you're hoping to have a final draft by the end of the year?
Yes.
So when would there be an opportunity for the community to review your second draft before you finalize the documents?
There could be a lot of ways we can do it. I'm sure we can work with Nikki on providing her that draft, something that we've looked at as a group and saying this is something we want to share out. We're close to a final thing, but we want to now share it. And then I would leave it up to you all know how to contact the community better than I do. But I think it's important that it gets publicized some way, whether electronically, both in meetings, however we need to get it out. I think it's important that we do that.
Well, are you willing to present the second draft to the community before it's finalized?
Yeah, I think that's what the goal of that would be. And I wouldn't call it the second draft, because we've been through so many iterations of this thing. It would be like our final draft, I would say. I think it's important that we get the feedback from everyone that we need to. Each one of our constituencies get that feedback. So like, it's important for the Teamsters to take it to their Teamster stewards, and it's important for the Denver Sheriff Department sits on our board, and that they take it back to their exec. All the people need to look at it and see if this is going to work.
So you'd be willing to call for a community forum, a special community forum, to present this draft for our review?
Yeah, I would leave that up to Tony, but yeah, I wouldn't mind participating or getting that out, or however I can do to accommodate it in my role of safety to get it out. I know it's important to Executive Director Riggs that we hear from the community, and I know it's important to everyone that sits on our board that we hear from it. So yeah, definitely.
And you would be willing to do yes. that in light of the holiday season coming up, and you wanting to get this out by the end of the year?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
You're thank welcome. You, Karen.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah. I saw your hand. Thank you.
Lisa Calderon, Chief of Staff for Councilwoman Candy Sedabaca, also former criminal justice professor, and have been working on the issues of justice reform in Denver for the past 15 years. So I've been through five sheriffs, counting this interim. You know, the Mayor Hancock is fond of saying that the community gave him a mandate to civilianize the Sheriff Department, and that actually wasn't accurate. And that includes this now Public Integrity Division. What we were asking for was independent oversight. not just civilian oversight, but independent oversight. So civilian oversight, the way it looks right now, is having mayoral appointees drive this process about reform around oversight. What it's looked like is having the executive director of safety expand his powers, increase his budget by 28%, and reduce Nick Mitchell's as the independent monitor. What it's looked like is having less community voice in a process, but calling it civilian oversight when you have more attorneys from the city attorney's office. That's not what we ask for with independent oversight. And, you know, the intricacies of the public integrity division, I'm not disagreeing with what you all are saying, but one of the things we also pushed for was parity between the departments. You know, when Lynn Eaglefeather stood up and talked about the complaints that she had, this is part of it, that we are having civilian oversight over one department, but ignoring another department where there's also significant issues of concern. Are we going to also civilianize the oversight of the Denver Police Department? The fact that the executive director of safety's office is in the police department tells you about a bias toward that department. So part of it I want to see come out of this is parity between both of the departments. Want to see the stop chipping away at the independent monitor's power and authority. Stop seeing the expansion of the director of safety's authority. And start seeing true community engagement. So that takes me to the next sheriff. And she was here. I don't see her here now.
She had another obligation.
Great. This. Well, yeah. This is important to be here. We're talking about the sheriff's department.
Well, she has multiple.
I get it. And I've got other places I need to be, too.
I just want to tell you that she was very sorry she couldn't stay. She actually said that.
Great. And we sent a letter to Troy Riggs and Michael Sapp, and thank you for getting back to us. But one of the questions remains unanswered, and that is, what is the process for selecting our next sheriff? We have an interim sheriff that none of us really knows anything about. And the community has not had an opportunity to vet her qualifications, and this is not about her. Mm-hmm. It's about a process of transparency, and we do not have that. So everything you all are talking about with the Public Integrity Division is going to be overseen by the next sheriff. And yet we were promised that there would be a community engagement process. We were promised that there would be transparency. And we were also told that the next sheriff would be implemented by January. That's 2 months from now, and we still have not had a process. So I know how this has worked. Like I said, I've gone through five sheriffs. And so if the public safety department thinks they can just slip in another interim person to be the next sheriff to guide all of these issues, these reforms, that's a problem. And so what I want the public to understand is you need to fight for a transparent process for selecting our next sheriff. And it's one of the reasons why Councilwoman Seda Baca is introducing a change for an elected sheriff and also introducing a change for a stronger independent monitor system, because we can't have one without the other. So I look forward to following up with COB members to talk about strengthening the oversight of the independent monitor for potentially an elected sheriff. And I look forward to finally getting an answer from the Department of Safety about what is going to be your transparent process for having community input for the next sheriff so we can vet their qualifications, any background controversies, et cetera. Thank you.
Thank you, Lisa. There are members of DOS here. Do you want to comment, Michael? On you guys were at our public meeting, so I assume that you have some response on last Friday. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Michael Sapp, Department of Safety. Glad to be here this evening. Want to clarify some points that Dr. Calderon brought up. One, we are going to have a transparent process for the appointed chair process. Two, the commitment that the mayor and executive director of safety made when they appointed Fran Gomez as the interim was that the mayor would receive recommendations in January. There was no commitment that the process would be complete by January. The commitment was that the mayor would have recommendations to him in January, and after January, we would decide if we wanted to further engage the community, engage the sheriff workforce on their future sheriff. And so we're going to continue to be transparent in this process. I think her question is fair, but we will get that to the COB. We'll get that to the community so that folks can participate in an inclusive and fair way on their next sheriff.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Michael.
Got one more thing.
Yes, please. Thank you. I didn't see you.
I'm always the invisible man.
Hello. No, it's the light. It's the light.
I'm just teasing. I'm Robert Davis. What's your name again, ma'am?
Karen Collier.
Ms. Collier?
Yes.
Okay. I wanted to just kind of address. I'm on the PID Executive Committee, and so I wanted to address a question that you had, because we're talking about the various drafts of the policy. The reality is that, and because I want to be make sure that it's very honest about what's going on, we are a recommending body. So when we talk about drafts and presenting drafts, I don't want anyone in this room to leave thinking that just because we put words on a piece of paper that, in fact, Director Riggs will actually implement it. The final say as to what is implemented and how it's implemented, et cetera, is at the total discretion of the Executive Director of Public Safety, Troy Riggs. So when we say that we want to have a policy finished by January, what we're saying is we want to have our recommendations. And so we can have these community meetings, but what really needs to take place is that we need to have a meeting with the director. And I'll be honest, and I don't like to, those of y'all who know me, I'm not about throwing stones, but this is the second community meeting we've had around this conversation. And I'm concerned that Director Riggs is not here again. I'm just going to be honest with you, because he's the one, he has the final say on what happens with this policy. And so I think that he needs to be here, and I think we need to make sure, and we will.
He was invited, but he wasn't able to come. He actually already had another obligation. He couldn't make this.
And I know how schedules work, and I do understand. That's why I don't want to just, like I said, I'm not into throwing stones. We need to, as a community, what needs to happen is that the conversation, and we can have a million and one conversations among ourselves, and we can make recommendations, and he has assured us that recommendations will be taken into consideration, et cetera, et cetera. But when the dust settles, what's going to happen is he will make the final decision as to what goes in the policy, mm-hmm. as to what constitutes performance versus what constitutes misconduct. He'll make the determination about how the triage process unfolds. He'll make the determination about how the AIU process goes. So he has an awful lot of freedom as it relates to how that whole thing works. I just want to make sure. So mm-hmm. I will say this, and I'm vice president for the Greater Metro Denver Ministerial Alliance. We will have another meeting, and we will try to coordinate it with Director Riggs so that before the policy goes into place, after recommendations have been made, that the community gets the chance to actually speak to the person who is going to make the final determination as to what goes into the policy. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Pastor Davis.
Yeah. I also just have to take a moment to appreciate Pastor Davis, who is the other of the two members of the 15-member advisory committee, along with me, representing the community. And he has been tireless, generous with his time. He's full of light and humor. I don't know if you could tell from that 2 seconds. He, like, brightens up every room he goes into. So I'm so grateful to have you.
Can I add one thing? Thank you, Dr. Davis. That was, it is, and one thing, I can't speak for Executive Director Riggs, But I can tell you what he's told me and what the direction he's given me as I've participated in this process is he wants to hear from the community. He wants to hear from our employees. He wants to hear from a lot of things. He hasn't made up his mind on any of this stuff. I've talked to him. I brief him. I try to keep him as soon as we have a meeting or things happen. I try to keep him and our executive staff up to date. He has really taken in and talked to me and given us clear direction that he wants to hear from the community, from the monitor, and from everyone at the table. And so I do want to say that that's important to him, and that, like I said, I can't speak for him, but he has voiced that to me.
Thank you, Amanda. Any other comments or questions or statements?
I had a couple.
Yes.
You had said earlier about triage, and I was wondering, for the cases that you decide not to triage, are they kept track of, and then is that transparent?
Yeah, that's a really good question, because that's the heart of our discussion right now. So every case is going to be triaged. And I shouldn't call it every case. Every complaint will be triaged by right now, and this is how it sits right now. And like we said, these are recommendations, and this is what we're recommending right now. And we hope to have some language with this as our AIU director works with the independent monitor and can propose it to our team. But every complaint will be looked at by him, by his eyes, what we have not decided is where will that sit? Where will it be tracked? Yes, it will be tracked. It has to be tracked. We cannot make the mistakes of the past where things fell through the cracks, important things. So that is what we're really trying to codify right now with our policy. Whether it's in our, we utilize a case management system called IA Pro, whether it's in there. Right now, it seems the sentiment is that they want to keep that for those serious misconduct cases that AIU will be investigating. But there's other ways to track. I do data a lot, and there's other ways to track. But I think what's been important and what I saw was the shift by the AIU director was that it was clear when he spoke to our executive advisory board was that Nick was going to have unfettered access to that data, to those decisions, and have oversight of that. Did I say that right, Nick? I don't want to. You're here, so.
Armando, I have a follow-up question to Molly's question. So if a complaint comes in and it's triaged, so a full investigation isn't opened, and it lands in, let's say, some spreadsheet somewhere of cases that, you know, went to die, how can the monitor's office provide real oversight if a full investigation isn't done and they aren't able to look at, you know, video or questions being asked to that subject deputy, but all they have is this line in a spreadsheet or maybe the text of the original complaint, nothing to compare it against?
Yep. So I've heard that from you before, Nikki, and when we went at our last meeting that you could not make, I did bring that up as a concern. That was something that we need to figure out in a spreadsheet. So Director Walter, he told us, kind of gave us a rundown of his process right now in triaging. Let's say he gets a grievance, and he brought in a grievance for us, one that he did. And let's say there were some allegations in this, and they were very general allegations. He reviewed the video, the facility video. It was clear to him that it did not take place as was indicated by the video. That was tracked on a tracking spreadsheet, but you're right. Where does Nick get to see that video that the director saw in his determination that this should not be opened as a case? That's something that we're going to have to figure out, and that we're going to have to build in, because if we're going to track that, and if Nick's office is going to have the oversight that's important, he should be able to see what is the director basing his decisions on. Mm-hmm.
I'm also a little, I'm interested about the cases where maybe it's not obvious from the video, or maybe even the video makes it look like something didn't happen, but if a deputy was questioned, that might lead to other evidence being gathered, or even the revelation of a systemic issue that might need to be looked at for a policy change.
Yep.
Isn't there kind of an opportunity for a big loss there of data?
Yes, that's something that the Office of Independent Monitors also told us. One of the things about a case management system is you can see patterns of conduct, particularly with particular deputies. If you know they're constantly being alleged to have done something, and over a course of time we see the same allegation, that is definitely a pattern of conduct that needs to be looked at too. So yes, that we need to figure out how we can capture that. And if it is an IA Pro, and we discussed it being an IA Pro, we also need to figure out that, we need to figure out how do we administrate that? How do we get all that? This always comes up in the conversation is, there are thousands of grievances, and do we make the leap that thousands of grievances now go into our case management system? The Office of Independent Monitor, and they've been clear that no, they don't. But that's sometimes where this goes. So I think that we're getting better, and we're getting closer to where we can figure out this better. I think we're getting close.
Armando, with that said, in your opinion, would you think that the proposed changes in declination and classification would increase the exposure of the Sheriff's Department to potential death lawsuits, et cetera, the ones that like we've encountered over the past couple of years, or would you say that it would lessen it? And I just ask that question because of where we are currently. Will we open ourselves up, or will the Sheriff's Department open itself up to more exposure to this because of the contraction of visibility? What is the?
Yeah, one thing I want to make clear is this wasn't, the goal of this was not to restrict, or it's not been my personal goal to restrict NICS access, sure, or the Office of Independent Monitor access, sure, and things of that nature, or is it to restrict the investigation of serious misconduct cases. One of the things that I look at this, and I look at a lot of these things on, is there have been some significant reforms that have happened that have been put into place. Do they guarantee that something bad's gonna happen, that something bad's not gonna happen in our jail? No, they do not. Do they put in some guardrails and some things in place that there is more oversight about what's going on, more eyes are seeing those things that are going on, particularly around uses of force? Yes, and one of the things that I was very happy to hear from Director Walcher was that he wanted to see more uses of force. He wanted the opportunity to review more cases and more video and more things about uses of force, and he was saying that he needed to figure out a way to do that. One of the folks that sits on our executive advisory board, he sits on it in the capacity of representing the Denver Sheriff's Union, is Captain Harold Minter. Captain Minter also leads our grievance and incident review team, and Director Walcher asked him pointedly in there, is I want to make sure that I'm seeing all these instances where there are uses of force, that he's having the opportunity to review that, thus giving OIM opportunity to review that. So that's where I'm really hoping. So I'm really hoping that we don't have any more force. That's not the intention of this. The intention of this is to really have whatever limited resources we have, and we do have some good resources that we can devote to this, that we're looking at those cases so we don't have another Michael Marshall incident, so we don't have these incidents, these tragic incidents that have occurred in our jails.
Thank you.
I just have one more question.
Did I answer your other one?
You did, thank you. Okay. One of your responses to Ms. Collier's question was that you would have a public forum for people to look at and give feedback to the final draft. And my question is, I know you guys have been at this for a long time and everyone's really ready for it to be done. So what is the, like, I guess, do you really think that you'll take any of that feedback? Let's say someone has something that's a really big problem, and like, what's the likelihood that you'd actually change anything?
So for me, and reminding you what Dr. Davis said, and I'm glad he brought up that point, our recommendations to the director, I am constantly, and there's urgency behind us getting this done, but I have no problem talking to the executive director and telling him we need to slow down. We need, someone brought up a very good point, or the community wants to weigh in on this particular issue, or we need to stop. We've done it before. We did it earlier in this process. We did it. We've done it. You know, through this process, we've listened. And so, me personally, I commit to that. If there's, the community comes up and says this is very important, this particular issue, we need to get this out, that's something that I will voice to the executive director. I'm down here. He's up here, but I will voice that. I make that commitment to you. I also make that. I've seen the people sitting around me, and Nikki won't take it sitting down. And I know there's some very strong voices in our room that we will make these recommendations as a board to Executive Director Riggs. One thing I do want to clarify, I can't set up a community meeting. I agree to participate right. in it. I have no problem sure. doing that. And I know that the office is important that we do hear from the community. So, yeah.
Thank you.
Any other board members have any comments, questions? Any other comments or questions from the community? There was one other issue that we mentioned, which was the Citizen Oversight Board being concerned that with regard to the meetings for discipline, there be a civilian in those meetings, that there be someone that's not just with the safety department or the monitor. And our feeling and view of that is that that's something that we're entitled to under the ordinance. But it is also, it's an outstanding issue. And I think, where is it again, Nikki? What's the status?
The request has been passed along to Director Riggs, and he's discussing it with the city attorney's office, whether or not they feel that citizen participation is required given the current language of the ordinance.
Thanks for bringing that up, and I'll add a little bit of an update to that. So as Nikki said when she did that great summary earlier, there is the recommendation, or what has been proposed, is there is what we call our discipline process is pretty convoluted. It can get, but after the investigation is completed, that investigation is then sent over to the conduct review unit. The conduct review unit then looks at the facts of the case. They look at the evidence. They then make a determination if a rule violation or violations have occurred. They make recommendations to the Executive Director of Safety's office. They also pass those recommendations on to Nick Mitchell through Greg Crittenden, and he does an OIM discipline review, and they weigh in and they provide their suggestions. One of the process improvements that we're trying to do this, and we're doing this because it's something that has worked well with DPD, and that's what we were being told, and from the Office of Independent Monitor, that this is something that's worked well. They called a chief's meeting, obviously, with the sheriff's department. It would be a sheriff's meeting, and that is where the Office of Independent Monitor, our city attorney's employment section, the conduct review unit, the sheriff and her designee or whoever, they're at the table and they start discussing the case. They discuss the facts of the case. And Greg, you go to these every day, so if I misspeak, please correct me. But they discuss the facts of the case and kind of see where they're at. The proposal, Nikki, has been that the COB be present at these and participate in these. Because that was even a point of contention, whether you're present just monitoring or present as a participant. I call it as a participant. If you're going to be there, you might as well participate, right? So as a participant in that. There is some ordinance language that has been discussed in our meetings, and not all of us are lawyers. And even though the lawyers in the room probably don't all agree on this, on the interpretation of that and on an interpretation of that. I'll tell you, I spoke to the executive director, and I've done it on two occasions recently, of this issue with him, and he has been very clear with me that he has not made up his mind on this. One of the arguments for the other side, since I think it'd be fair to present one of the arguments for the other side, is that does not stop the case at that point. You know, they see where they're at, and then the next step in the process is a contemplation of discipline hearing. And that is when the officer, the subject officer or deputy in this case, comes to the same meeting of the same folks with their representative, whether it be their union representative or their lawyer, and they provide their mitigation, they provide their side of the story, they provide their awards, their past history, all those things are also things. One of the arguments that I've heard against having citizen participation at the sheriff's meeting is that they're not there to hear and they're there to weigh in, but they're not going to hear the side of the accused, and they're not going to hear whatever mitigating or whatever, and that they're and that is unfair to some people that have argued against this. Executive Director Riggs has expressed to me that he's heard these sides of the argument. He is not leaning either way, but because of the there seems to be a disagreement about the interpretation of the ordinance, of the COB ordinance, that he wants a clear, singular city attorney's opinion. And that will help guide his decision making in this. So that's my update.
Thank you, Armando. And I'd like to point out that the board's response has been, so invite us to the sheriff's meetings and invite us to the contemplation of discipline meetings. There's also the issue which I alluded to in my summary, which is there's the ordinance language, right? There's what our law requires. That never prevents the Department of Safety from going above and beyond. So even if the city attorney's office doesn't require we have to be there, doesn't decide we have to be there, we have asked that they consider inviting us anyway, just in the spirit of transparency.
And I would really encourage, if there's community members here today, if you have a voice on this, please let me know now. I will pass that voice along to where you stand on that, with that if that's important to you, if you can please let me know, and that is something that I will communicate to Executive Director Ridd.
And the last thing I'd like to say on this issue, to kind of level set, is for the community to know that when we're in those meetings, we'll be bound by confidentiality requirements and have certain privileges. So we're not going to be coming out to the community and saying, you know, we were in this disciplinary meeting and so-and-so said this and so-and-so disagreed. That's not how this is going to work. If the COB is in that meeting, it's really us being there to observe the process, understand the character of the process, maybe have the opportunity to identify systemic problems that we want to then further discuss with the Department of Safety or with the monitor's office, but not to come and report back to the community on specific disciplinary outcomes.
Thank you for that clarification, yeah. Nikki. And thank you, Armando, for that clarification, too. Is there something you want to say? No? Okay. Well, thank you all for being here. This is a lot of weighty stuff, that, you know, very complex issues. But these policies, we're talking about policy recommendations and where we're moving with the sheriff's department's handling of allegations of misconduct, which, I mean, we're talking about policies, but these impact real lives, right? You know, as evidenced by the Marshall family being here, it matters how we conduct ourselves and how the sheriff's department conducts its business, and we want it to be the best it can be, and we truly believe, and that's why we're here, that having effective oversight makes us all better, makes the entire process work better, so we can identify patterns, for example, that we've talked about, where we have transparency in places that we need. We all believe and agree there should be transparency. And these key issues that we've talked about tonight are, for us, I think we'll continue to have the conversation, but we want to thank you all for being here and listening to the discussion and adding your points and your questions, your viewpoints on the issues. Please do not hesitate to reach out to us. You can contact us. Our information's on our website. You can also reach, it sounds like Armando's making himself available.
Oh, yes, please. my ears don't close after this meeting, please. And I do want to make sure we hear
thank you.
And listen. And
thank
you.
And we also have a Facebook page, so you can search for us on Facebook and reach out to us. But these are important dialogues, and we hope that you all stay engaged. I want to thank you all again for coming out on Thursday night to talk about these issues, these very important issues. So at this point, I'll say good night. And hope I see you again soon. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.